team, to another episode of the Paraffed Huddle podcast. Today I've got Pat with me. You're an old friend of mine. I used to do a placement way back, and I thought, oh, this is prime opportunity to get him on the screen and bring him in. So we are at the AUT Millennium today. Thank you for coming by and welcome.
No worries.
So Pat works with and for athlete development, which runs out of Millennium. I will do a bad job at explaining it. So you hit it. And what is athlete development?
We're a part of AUT Millennium. We're a business unit here, but essentially we're a business that's focused on everything youth athlete. So we want to long-term, like our big vision is we want to help minimize injuries in the youth athlete population, help kids have a better time in sport, and, you know, just in general, like improve sporting development so that kids are more prepared to be awesome athletes later in life.
Mm-hmm. So the population that you coach on the daily, where do they kind of, what's the bracket? Where do you kind of sit with?
In terms of age?
Yeah, like population demographic thing.
So, I mean, age group wise, we work mainly with 8 to 18 year olds. So, namely kids that are in school bar, like new entrants, really.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get the odd like 6 or 7 year old that's pretty boisterous. But we tend to also get athletes that aren't necessarily in like the top echelon of their sport already. So like if you take a teenager, for instance, the kids that are doing really well in their sport, they will often already kind of feel like they're getting what they need in terms of support.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our work centered around like strength conditioning or non-sport specific skill development. So those kids kind of don't really need us, so we don't really see them as much.
So it's not like specific to a set amount of sports?
No, so your kids can come from any sport, any background, they can be at any level, they don't have to be good or bad, they just have to kind of want to improve or want to have an awesome time playing or training.
Yeah, that's cool. And so, like, you've worked with the youth and been like around youth in sports for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
What's kind of some of the biggest understandings and learnings that you've picked up along the way?
I think especially with youth has been like the importance of joy and fun for people like in their training.
Mm-hmm.
I think like training kids, you get a real like honest set of feedback from them in terms of like their behavior. Like if they're not liking it, they'll let you know. If it's boring, they'll let you know. So you, like the need to, as a coach, like really create places or create an environment that's actually like an awesome place to be, and how that impacts like the response that a kid will have, but also an adult. Like I definitely have taken it into like coaching adult populations as well. That I think when kids are unhappy in sport, joy is kind of the first thing that's missing. It's like they're not there, or they're not being supported by coaches to have a fun time. Like the emphasis has shifted away from joy or just development to, you know, outcome and process and performance instead. So,
yeah. And do you think, like, do you find a direct correlation between how well an athlete does in their development and how much they're enjoying the time with you guys? Like the time they're having training, not necessarily just with you guys, but their like sports trainings as well?
Nothing that we've like sort of measured directly, but absolutely. Like, I think kids that are more, that feel they're in the right place, that there's a place where they can have fun, are so much more likely to kind of engage intensively in their training. So, you know, if I'm providing an environment that's like really, really supportive and really engaging and really fun, then a kid's going to be there, or a kid in that environment is going to try so much harder than a kid who doesn't really want to be there because they don't feel sort of supported. So yeah, I think there's a direct link between like the joy or the support that they feel in any training space and like the intensity or the intent they bring to that session as a result.
Because it's the adults that write the sessions and facilitate them, so is the definition of fun different between age?
Between age, like adult kid?
Yeah. Or does it depend on the person?
No, I think it does vary a little bit. So I think like in terms of psychosocial development, there's obviously a difference in the way kids think to the way adults think, right? So even down to like the reason why people partake in sport or why they train, like that's probably one of the bigger differences. Like often kids are there almost purely for social reasons before puberty, right? Like so the number one reason they're in that sport is because it's just really fun to be there with their mates.
Mm.
And that's often why kids choose a particular sport. And sort of as they start developing psychosocially, like the social status side of their brain kind of switches on, and it feels, or it starts to feel good to feel good at something.
Yeah.
Right. To be acknowledged for performing well. And so that kind of side of the brain kicks in, and they can then start to stay involved or shift into different sports based on like what makes them feel good rather than just who they're around or,
mm-hmm.
you know, that side of it. And then that sort of sticks around, I think, a lot through till kind of post-puberty, where adults can start adding in this, you know, what's actually worthwhile side of it, like what sport's going to get me where I want to go, or what training environment's going to get me where I need to go.
There's more, you know, behind it. It's a lot more, like, of reasoning.
A performance-oriented, like, rationale to why I'm here or why I would go back to a training or trainer.
Yeah. So, like, in the youth development and youth sport world, is there a kind of issue or problem or something you'd like to adapt or change or fight almost?
Yeah. I think, like, the biggest challenge, I guess, is around the way sports are structured to kind of tell kids whether or not they're, like, meant to be in sports or not. So both in terms of, like, the load and, like, the stress that kids get put under, like, kids, you know, teenagers included, and how that kind of is really, really misaligned with actually, like, their developmental pathway. So I think at the moment there's a big problem in that kids are pushed out of sports so far before they're anywhere near their potential. Like, you know, physically speaking, like, we're not finished growing until we're, like, early 20s, and the brain's actually later than that. So, like, psychosocially or emotionally or mentally, we're just so far away from, like, our potential of, like, how we should actually be thinking or how our body's actually going to be, you know, once it's sort of settled and fully grown. So the fact that, like, kids' sport is so intense and that kids are being pushed out of sport at such a young age at the moment, you know, mainly through high school or at the end of high school, is a real kind of frustration point.
So the way the system is structured,
yeah,
doesn't, yeah, favor anyone doing sport after school unless you're super determined.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't favor late maturers. Like, you know, the classic is a kid who, you know, goes through most of high school, especially like a young male, because they obviously mature later than females, and is put under a bunch of stress, but their body's just nowhere near ready for it. And also, like, mentally, they're nowhere near ready for it because their brain's not fully developed. So, like, it sucks that a kid like that who might, you know, 2-3 years down the line be, like, an amazing physical specimen but has already kind of been told they're not good at something, or and believe that, like, okay, well, obviously sport's not for me because I've had 5 really average years of it through school.
Yeah, and then as well, I don't know if you've read it, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yep.
Really great book. And he talks about how, you know, there's all these LeBron James and Michael Jordans and these top athletes, but that could be down to the fact that they were given so many opportunities because of their, like, early maturation. You know, they got stronger and bigger much sooner than somebody else that's maturing late. And then because they were already these amazing athletes with this unbelievable talent, they're on rep programs, they're on training camps, they get to see the best. And now they've got the advantage of all these opportunities, you know? So that kind of doesn't make sense
There's something like, this is just how, like, organizing sport based on, like, chronological age impacts it, but there's something like 70 or 75% of, like, professional sports athletes are born in the first half of the year.
Yeah, and it's that's in the book as well, and it's ice hockey,
which is crazy.
It's like, what? So sorry if you're born after September, you're
the current sport world doesn't like you as much.
Which it does. Although I think, wouldn't it be June here? Because we start...
Most sports are January, yeah. So it's how old you are on the 1st of January.
Because our school year is a little bit different, though. So it might favour...
I think that's only like... It may depend on, like, summer versus winter code. Like, what age you are at the start of, like, August, for instance, for a summer code. But...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm involved in rowing, and I know that's all 1st of January.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's just insane, you know? And so how do you... Like, do you find yourself... actively trying to alter that, or like you and AD?
I think, like, again, lockdown was a real cool chance to, you know, reflect on where we're at and what we're trying to do to solve that problem.
Mm.
But it is a massive issue. It's like the whole construct of sport, like not just in New Zealand, but, you know, or not specifically at high school, but also New Zealand and like the world over, is like just the way we've organized sports to develop people for high performance is just all such a rush. Like it's a big conveyor belt of factory to just create great young athletes. But I just think it's a little misaligned to
like, the development the other time. Side.
Yeah.
100%. And we all know like people that have been through that and
you
see them, and it's as well, it's sad to see people that put 100% in and then have no plan B. And it's like they don't have the time to build a plan B. It's not their fault, you know? So if you were gonna like design or create like a recipe for your perfect athlete, like if they walked in the door and you're like, you are my ideal, what would that kind of package be?
I think the biggest things are around like the qualities they have that are transferable across any sport or any context. So that they're resilient, that they can solve problems, that they're robust.
Mm.
That's kind of like a big three. So, you know, they're not fazed too much by like challenge. They embrace challenge and they know how to deal with not being the best at something. That's like, that's an opportunity to them, not a threat. They're robust in that, like, they've just got a great sense of movement skill because they've done all sorts of stuff. Or if they haven't got that yet, then we build an awesome set of movement competency by giving them a huge array of movement experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we often talk about that as, like, tools in the toolbox.
Yeah. And so, like, when you're in a session, and let's say you give them a challenge of, like, balancing on something that's unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, let's say there's this one athlete that's, like, really struggling and... like really struggling, how do you guys like act on that, and like what kind of things would you feed to that athlete to get them?
I think like prior to that, one of the big pillars of what we do is called appropriate challenge. So we want to make sure that the challenge we're giving an athlete to start with isn't too far away from like their actual ability level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of like an athlete's skill level compared to an athlete's to a challenge you provide an athlete, like they need to be married up somewhat. If flow theory says like if the challenge is way beyond the athlete's perception of themselves or their actual skill level, then they're going to meet that challenge with a lot of anxiety because they're not going to feel they're anywhere near it, and that's going to be like they'll be hesitant to jump in or even try. Or maybe they do give it a try and they just like straight away shut off, and they're way less likely to actually jump back in and give it another try. And of course, you can have the other side of that, which is like when the challenge is really, really easy, then the athletes get bored and I'm just like, well, this is no good for me. So I think keeping that in mind, like when we see an athlete struggle with something, it's just about thinking like, how can I modify the task to fit the athlete's like skill level a little better so that it's maybe not so far outside of their comfort zone or their like skill level that it is attainable.
Because
I think it should be attainable. It should take a little bit of work, but it should still be attainable. If we're giving them things that aren't attainable, then it's going to be like
a bit crushing.
Yeah, especially at a kid's level.
And as well, I think if you gave the opportunity to do something that was difficult but they eventually achieved it, then it kind of feeds that message of if you just stick to it, you'll get it, kind of like idea, without you saying to them, hey, if you just stick to this, you'll get it.
Absolutely. Like I think in designing problems or designing like challenges to give kids, that's exactly what we want. We want something that's gonna take them a little while to solve. Like the best challenge is one that the kid doesn't actually get first try, but they go, nah, I can actually do that. Like I know I can do that. I just have to like figure it out.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it might take them like 10 tries. It might take them 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Or if it's a really cool challenge, it could take days or like a couple of weeks. Like,
yeah.
I know, like, juggling is one that I've been playing with lately. It's like there's something about it that it just seems so doable. But I know when I started, like during lockdown, I could three ball juggle, but I couldn't four ball juggle. But I
was even the fact that you can three ball juggle.
Yeah, no, like it must be doable because I've seen so many people that can do it. And like I sucked. I was terrible. I could barely get like a single throw, but I knew that I could, not that I could get there, but like it had to be doable. So
someone else can do it.
So any challenge we create has got to have like kind of that sense of like, doableness.
Yeah, 100%. And so all of the things that we've talked about in the last 10 minutes or so, do you think they apply to a para athlete or an adaptive athlete?
Yeah.
In the same way?
Exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
I think para-athlete, adaptive athlete, they've all got the same needs. Kind of underpinning that side of it, we talk a lot about self-determination theory.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as humans, we want to feel like a training environment is supportive for us. It's going to get us where we want to go as an individual. That it's going to kind of challenge us in the right way. It's going to provide us an opportunity to grow and get better at the sport or the skills we want to build up. And there's also people around us that care. So, you know, I think exactly the same stuff applies.
Regardless.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so if this is kind of digging back into the sports culture side of things,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of like the coaches and their parents, like we, like all kind of people that are in the sports industry know about the car ride home,
yeah.
you know, the car ride home after the game, what do you say to your child? What kind of things can like coaches and parents be doing to support these really cool opportunities to grow a great person, but as well a great athlete?
One of the coolest things I've read on that topic was around, it was like a blog on how parents should be the guiding light, not the person kind of holding the hand and dragging the kid along.
Mm.
So it was a cool little story that was like a great metaphor for it, where I think a father's son, you know, came home from sport and he's like, ah, oh, like I'm tired, I need to run, I need to get my training done. And you know, the parents are like, well, what are you gonna do about it? He's like, well, I just don't know how to do it. Like, I don't, it's dark outside, it's snowing, like I just don't know if it'll be like appropriate to train. And so I think the response of the parent at that time was just like, well, what if I drove behind you and like I'll just have the car lights on so you can see where you're going, you can still get your training done. And like the kid was like, that could work. And it was a really good metaphor for like how that parent didn't tell them to like hurry up, you've got to do it, you said you do it, or tell them like, no, just like take it easy, you don't have to do it. But they just gave them an opportunity to make a decision for themselves, where it was like, here's a way that you can do it. So I as a parent have opened a door for you, and it's kind of up to you to make the decision now about whether you make it work or don't.
Yeah.
So they didn't influence their decision, kind of like heavily influence it, but they just gave them an opportunity to make the decision for themselves. I think that's like a metaphor for the way parents and coaches should be working with kids. Is like, we want to hold them accountable to their own decisions, but it's more about like opening up opportunity rather than kind of pushing them through any door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like designing the opportunity for
them.
Yeah. With you. And so like a step further from that, how do you think this Kiwi sports culture, like as well as the system, could be adapted to suit youth to develop better and like not lose as many athletes as we go through?
Big question.
Big topics today.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that. Like the number one thing for me, because maturation and like physical and psychosocial development is so important to us, is around how kids are currently living in a world that is really, really structured based on the way adults are living. So, because the parents got to go to their 9 to 5 or, you know, 8 to 5, traffic dictates that they have to get up earlier to, you know, make it to work on time.
Yeah.
That influences the time that kids have to then go to school as well, right? So,
and you think that's the problem?
Yeah, well, I mean, kids need more sleep than parents. Kids are also kind of engineered through, you know, the way we've evolved, or teenagers especially going through their growth spurt, their optimal sleep time is later. Their optimal wake up time is like not until 9 or 10 a.m. But they're in a world where they have to kind of, they're reliant on parents to get them where they need to go. So yeah, all of a sudden they're waking up at 5:30 and training early. And you know, all of that I think is based around an adult's timeline and like how their day looks. So the biggest thing I think we would change to help kids is actually like fit their life to their physiology a little better. So like starting school later, giving them a little bit more time to sleep in. If they're going to train, then they can do it at 8 or 9 a.m. instead of like 5 a.m. Like swimmers and rowers wear shockers. And just give them a little bit more like of an appropriate lifestyle for their age and for their physical development.
Rather than just a mini adult's lifestyle.
And then I guess second to that is, given that kids aren't really finished growing or anywhere near their their mental or physical kind of development endpoint, which isn't till around like 20, early 20s. I think the intakes into like a lot of high performance environments would also, I'd ideally push them later.
Yeah.
We talk about how there's like, there's definitely no such thing as a high performance teenager or high performance kid. You know, there's talented kids and there's like high performing kids, but I think, yeah, no such thing as an actual high performance kid.
Yeah. Where is the idea of like, oh, you want to be the best, you have to start when you're three. Like, where is that idea of go hard, go early, just annihilate it come from, do you think?
I can't remember the author. I don't know if it was Gladwell. But that 10,000 hour rule was a shocker.
Yeah.
And it was misinterpreted. I know a lot of the data in that was
a little off, wasn't it? That's clicking something in my brain as well.
But yeah, like the idea of 10,000 hours practice to become an elite sports person was like really well adopted. And so earlier the better. And at the time, I guess it made sense. Like the more time you spend on something, the better you're going to get at it.
But then how you spend on it is like a big influence.
So much, there's a lot of shortfalls to that kind of approach.
Yeah.
Okay,
so if you were going to, we'll start to wrap it up, but if you were going to, if someone on the other end of the screen was an athlete who's young, enthusiastic, willing to dedicate themselves and like really, really pushing for them to be the best athlete they can be right now, and they're kind of in that early teens bracket, what would you kind of say to them? What would you emphasize?
It's like a really tough question, I think. I think we tend to fool ourselves in terms of what it actually takes to become an elite athlete or like to be the best in a sport. There is a lot of luck in it, and people probably don't like hearing that, but the reality is that not everyone's going to get there and not everyone can get there. Only sort of 2% of people become a professional athlete of any kind.
So
I think while you, when you're at that stage of like being a, you know, really, really immersed in sport and loving it and having that aspiration to make it in sport, putting yourself in environments that like are joyful, that, you know, you feel are really, really supportive, that there's people who care about you, that, you know, you feel like you're actually getting better, and rather than just going the places that you sort of think you need to go because that's maybe the next stepping stone. It's a real tough one, because I think there's a lot of noise in terms of what, like the way athletes are pulled in all sorts of directions. But yeah, just choosing based on what actually gives you the most joy.
Yeah.
Because then if you don't make it, at least you've had an awesome time.
Yeah, 100%. And you wouldn't want to like finish your career and have like a sour taste about it.
I think a lot of people do right now.
Yeah, realized it was like hard and tough.
Well, that sucked and I didn't make it. So what was the point?
Yeah. What was all for?
Yeah.
And then final question, just because it's just kind of been a staple for all the ones, all the podcasts I've done. But if you're going to turn around to yourself 5 years ago, what would you say to yourself? What advice would you give yourself?
For me, I think I was always like really eager to get to the next best thing, like to the next job, to the next opportunity. And so I think I spent too much time like concentrating on where I could go next in my career instead of just trying to do a really good job of where I was at the time. And even now I've been at AD for 5 years, but like my mind frame around the work I'm doing now is very different to what I was, how I was approaching it like a few years ago. So yeah, just trying to do an amazing job of what I'm at and like the jobs I've got at the time. That would definitely be it. Like do a good job now and it'll pay off later. Like the opportunity will open up by doing that good job.
100% in. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, guys, there's been so many little nuggets of information. So I think this is actually one of our longest ones, but it's awesome. And I think if you're going to re-listen any of them, then probably re-listen to this one and pick up something new and take it and run with it. I will, as always, chuck all the details in about Pat and about AD so that you can get in touch with him and his team if you want to hear more about what they do. But otherwise, just like check them out on Instagram and on Facebook, and they've got so much good content that flies through. So check all of that out. And other, thank you. That was awesome. It's always good to catch up and talk.
Yeah, good to chat.
We're going to go to the gym now. And otherwise, I will see you guys next episode. See you, team. Oh,